Gareth Jones on Speed Newsgate. Sony announced at CES in Los Angeles this week that they are indeed entering car production. In a partnership with Honda, Sony are already accepting orders for their new car, which will only be sold in California. The vehicles will be branded Aphila. This, of course, is a truly terrible name. Mind you, could have been worse. They could have called it a toucher, a rubber-upper, or even a groper. Good luck, Sony! Hello and welcome to the first episode in season 21, our 20th year of Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, sitting on my lap is Seamus the cat, who you may hear purring, and connected via the gift of electricity are Alex Goy.
Hello.
And Zog.
Hello.
Hey fellas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. This is the first time we've spoken in 2025. How's it going for you two so far? Still alive?
Still alive. Spent the day writing things, doing some travelling tomorrow, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Good. Still wearing a vaguely festive jumper.
Good lad. It is the season to continue to be jolly.
Yeah.
How about you, Z? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been doing a certain amount of DIY around the house involving recklessly wielding circular saws and other stuff. No injuries in the course of doing that.
Good.
And then I managed to rip off half a toenail putting on a pair of trousers.
What?
So the lesson I've learned from this is that I should...
Yeah, me too. Hang on. Can we go back to the type of trouser? Were they drain pipes?
Doing DIY, but not in my trousers.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to come back to the DIY. Can we discuss trousers? What the hell trousers tore a toenail off? A pair of jeans with a very heavy hem?
Well, no, it was a pair of...
Latex?
How would you describe them? It's a kind of...
Bondage?
Kind of your classic long leg cargo pant with pocket and so on. But they have a slightly elasticated cuff at the bottom of the leg.
Sporting.
And I was putting them on in a bit of a hurry. And one of my toenails was a little bit sticky outy. And in the very firm tug that I gave the left trouser leg... to put it on. Yeah, I lost about half a toenail.
Ick.
Which was quite painful.
Yes.
Yeah. Boys, let me, as I'm the oldest of this group by some margin, let me give you some advice. As we get older, there are two things that you need to take care of more than ever before. One of your toenails, of course, right? Because you get older, you get a bit more calcified. You get big, thick, horrible devil's toenails. So you got to trim them carefully and regularly. And the other one is... Watch your eyebrows, guys. Your eyebrows will want to reach over your glasses. And at that point, young children are frightened.
Yes, yes. I'm beginning to get stray brow hair every now and then. Decides, you know what would be really cool? To be over there. And to be above all the others. And you go, well, I don't want you to do that. Well, I'm very sorry.
They do their own thing. I get long white ones. I keep mine under control. And one of the nicest things that ever happened to me recently was when I went into a Savers, you know, the chemist shop, the pharmacist, wherever they are, in Stoke Newington once. And I'm putting my stuff in the bag and the young woman serving me stops and goes, "You've got beautiful eyebrows." Really? No one's ever said that before.
I'll take that. A rare one. That's a very rare compliment.
I'd never even thought about it, but beautiful. Anyway, hey, what have I been doing? Not apart from thinking about eyebrows and the festive thing. I've been watching the Dakar.
How is it? Tell me everything.
Oh, gee. You know what? We all agree that we love Le Mans, right? Le Mans is the greatest motor race in the world. Or is it? Because every time I watch Dakar and realise these guys are doing a 600-kilometre stage on motorbikes, they've got broken collarbones and shoulders and noses and they're still carrying on in this Herculean effort to get their bike out of the sand and back on the track when they get it wrong, and other riders stopping to help with that sense of incredible camaraderie. You watch the Dakar like you watch Le Mans, right?
you're trying to beat the race.
Yeah.
And I think Le Mans pretty hard to do, but I think Dakar is practically impossible to do. And the people who do finish, or let alone win, are achieving the impossible. Carlos Sainz is, as we speak, being assessed by the FAA to see if he can continue after a rollover, as they call it.
I thought his roll cage was bent, so he's not allowed to.
It looked pretty banged up, certainly, from the design scene.
I think they're reviewing the situation as we speak.
Yeah, because there was a thing this morning, and he went, yep, roll cage is knackered, we're out. And I was like, oh, bother. That's annoying.
There may be some clause by which they can return.
So is that a thing that the team is not allowed to repair or replace during the event?
I believe, yeah. Under safety, FIA safety regulations, I understand. That's all I know.
It would make absolute sense from a safety point of view that you're not allowed to continue with a roll cage that's been damaged beyond a certain degree, you know. But I would have thought it wouldn't be beyond the technical ability of the team to fix that roll cage with the right tubes and people and welding equipment. But
I'm just looking at it now. Sainz forced out of Dakar due to damaged car. So he had two crashes in 2 days. One was fixable, the other one was not.
Right. Maybe it's a cost control thing, Zogger, as well. Could fix it, but it would be a big job, yeah.
Certainly teams have played a little bit fast and loose with roll cage regulations. You know, not in the Dakar necessarily, but certainly in other events, there have been cases where teams and manufacturers have definitely skimped / cheated on the roll cage bit of things to save some weight and make the cars quicker, but not necessarily safer. So I'm saying it's kind of okay to maybe lead it to the safety a bit.
And it's a balance between, you know, building the lightest car and the strongest car, isn't it? So you can survive. I was reading today about the development of the Audi e-tron Dakar car T1 plus category thing that they ran and won in last year. And it has these nice slots, as so many Dakar cars do, on the outside, just before the rear wing, where you can keep spare wheels and tyres. And they worked out that this was a great idea. They slipped in, aerodynamic advantage, lovely. However, once you take the good tyre out, put that on your vehicle and put your damaged, ripped or torn tyre, it won't fit in that slot. It was so slim, the margin. So the Series 2 version of the car had widened slots for that to fit in. You know, there's a lot of detail work. It's a very specific task that you're building that car to do. And the Dacia that's out there at the moment is related to the BRX Hunter that ProDrive developed. It's the son of,
yes, it's a ProDrive underneath. I went to do some things with it last year that I couldn't talk about at the time, and by the time I could talk about it, it wasn't entirely relevant anymore.
Now's your chance.
Well, one of my favourite things about it was that the guys at ProDrive were terrified that Dacia would turn up and say, yeah, we want it to look like a Duster. Because ProDrive were like, well, it's going to look ridiculous. It'll look far too big and far too silly. It would look completely out of turn. But Dacia thankfully turned up and went, can you just make it look really cool, please?
Nice.
No, that's a good attitude.
At which point the guys at ProDrive were like, excellent. Yes, we're in good stead here. This is good. We like this. Thank you. So, yes, it is a good...
It's a good bit of kit.
Yeah, it's a very good bit of kit. It is a ProDrive...
Is it winning?
...underneath, but it's not really the BRX Hunter. They've used many of the things that they used on the Hunter, but it's a very different wheelbase, I believe, and width, and the overhangs are significantly shorter on this car. They've got a different engine, different engine installation, and all the cooling requirements that come with that are different. So it is a different car.
They've got some really cool engineering bits on it as well. Some of the side bits are magnetised, so that when you're changing a tyre...
You can leave your tool.
You can stick your wheel nuts to it and don't get it lost in the desert, which is really smart.
I like that. I like that a lot, having spent a lot of time looking for either the tool that I put down 5 minutes ago, or the nut, or the bolt, or the little bit of the engine that I removed 10 minutes ago. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, handy, you see.
Let me see if I can find my piece from last year, because it was about a year ago. There were some really, really cool things. Oh, yeah, as the dashboard in the Sandrider is modular, like the Dieter Rams stereos back in the day.
Yeah, B&O.
Because each different driver wants their cabin their own way. So they've sort of put it on two runners and you can slide bits. I mean, it's not an easy job, but it's a job. Rather than having to custom design various bits, everyone gets the same bits but in their own order.
Nice.
They've got magical materials on the seats that sort of moisture wick and regulate temperature better than Alcantara, which is mega. Sandboard slot into the bodywork at the rear, which is great. It's got a fold-down booty thing, which you can also use as a bench if you'll need to take a break. The tyres are strapped to the car. The straps onto the side of the car rather than in a cubby hole. That's mega cool. The paint on it has got some magical material on it that'll keep it 35 degrees cooler than it otherwise would be. Lots of cool aero on it. The spoiler on the roof is actually functional. It's mega, basically. I really like it. You know me, I love a Dacia.
Aero has to be really important, right? We love a Dacia. Oh, by the way, on Eurosport, they do keep referring to it as the Dacia Sandrider. They don't say Dacia, and that bugs the heck out of me, because surely Dacia say Dacia, then it's Dacia, because that's what it is, right?
Well, yes, that's not what it's called. It's like calling you Gareth.
Yeah, well, they do in South Wales, isn't it? Yeah, look, you.
All right, Gareth.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's an Australian of you there. Gar, am I Gar? But yeah, I think it's great that Dacia are there. The amalgamation of the name Sandero is one of their road cars, and the Sand Riders, and all the kudos that comes with that of beating this English word I couldn't think of. The Welsh word is Anghenfil, monster. That's funny. You see them, right? They get to the top of the dunes, and the dunes are soft at the top, and they slice through the top, and they've got a vertical drop down the side, so they cant the car sideways rather than going vertically down, which is what happened to Sainz
twice in 2 days.
Twice, yeah. I saw one of them, and you nose dump. It's really unpleasant. And he's my age, isn't he? 63 or something like that, Carlos Sainz. So that stuff, when you're winded when you're 20, it takes about 20 minutes to get your breath back. When you're winded when you're 63, cancel the next 4 days, really. He's a tough old boot. Love Dakar, but the motorcyclists. You see, I'm not really a motorcycle man. I love cars. I deliberately don't watch MotoGP, otherwise I'd watch all of it. I do have a bike license. I love riding bikes. I had an Enduro, the Kawasaki Tengai, which was a big tank, four-valve, single 650. I'd have done the Dakar in there. I rode across California in it as well. But I love all that stuff. But watching the bike riders, this is where, you know, we use the term awesome a lot. Mm-hmm. When you see something, oh, epic, awesome. No, we don't use that correctly. Watching what these guys do is awesome. And this race is epic. I cannot recommend it hardly enough. You're going out there tomorrow, Alex, right?
I am. I'm getting up early doors to go to Heathport Aero to get on an aeroplane and then get on another aeroplane. And then I will be somewhere in the depths of Saudi Arabia with the lovely folk from Ford. So I was hoping to have a chat with Mr. Sainz about how his race is going. That might not be on the cards anymore.
Listen, talk to him about the vehicle, because this is a new Raptor this year that is designed by M Sport. Previously it was built in South Africa, I believe, but this is UK built, M Sport in Cumbria. It's quite a piece of kit.
It looks mega. Yeah, I'm going to get the... I've got the skinny of it all. I've been too flat out to do too much reading, which is very lucky. Normally January is incredibly empty and I'm sort of sat bereft going, I'm never going to work again. But no, been a bit busy. But yes, off tomorrow, and then we're going to watch the stage on Thursday, and then Friday we're going to wang around the desert in various Ford products and interview people and have chats and take nice pictures of things and generally lark about and then fly home.
Oh gosh, I'd love to do that.
You know what? It's not the first time I've been offered a trip out, but it's the first time I've been able to sell it. For people like us, it's great, but for wider audiences, it's quite a difficult sell. But actually, we've found somewhere, some lovely places that want to have some lovely things. So there will be things. I will be able to point you in the direction of stuff once it's written and all put together.
Beautiful.
And hopefully Mr. Science is still there and hasn't gone, sod this, I'm off back to Spain.
There are political undertones to this race being in Saudi Arabia these days as well. This is part of Saudi Arabia's attempt to become a little more engaged with European approaches and attitudes and opening Saudi Arabia up as a holiday destination. Oh, we're friendly and nice, you know, and an international sporting event, one of the premier international motorsport events in the world, has now found a home in Saudi Arabia for what, how many years? 5 or 6 years, maybe more now. And it's an incredible success, I would argue.
Saudi Arabia are doing this across a lot of sports. They're,
indeed.
You know, there are many sports are benefiting from, and some people would say being compromised by, in some cases, the huge amounts of Saudi money.
Aston Martin. Sorry, I just cleared my throat there. Aston Martin are very Saudi-owned, aren't they?
Yeah, although, but that's a very different sort of thing. I mean, in that I think that's getting into investing in a, you know, a team and a company rather than having an undue influence on a particular sport.
I see what you mean, yeah.
And, you know, I think there are some legitimate concerns about how the large amounts of Saudi money can affect some of those sports.
Regardless of all this, I would go to the Dakar at the drop of a hat and shake the hand, the broken, bruised knuckles of every rider and driver in all the classes that cross the line individually to say, dude, I don't know how you did what you did. That's amazing. I love it. Just looking at the rankings as we speak after stage three, leading the Toyota Gazoo Racing Team, Saud Variawa, I think is how he says his name. He's South African. Francois Cazalet is his co-driver. The X-Raid Mini JCW team are running in second place with a Mini, which is really a BMW underneath, isn't it? Then Toyota again in third, Seth Quintero, the American. Another Mini in fourth, the X-Raid team again, Guillaume de Mevius, I think you say that that way. Dacia are in sixth, Nasser Al Attiyah at the moment, he's the man, he's going to win it in my opinion. And Matthias Ekstrom, the highest placed Ford at the moment, at seventh. I won't run down the whole thing, but man, I can't wait to stop recording this programme so I can go and watch the coverage again tonight. That's how I feel about it. I'm serious.
What's the coverage on? Where can I watch this? I'll stick it on while I'm packing.
Eurosport 1 and Eurosport 2. There's a nice package every night at 8 o'clock with the dulcet tones of Carlton Kirby, who's got a very mellow, chilled approach to the commentary, and it's lovely. Man, I love Dakar. The end. Sorry, did I go on about the Dakar too much?
No, not at all.
Being the modern man I am, I started watching The Walking Dead last night after the Dakar coverage. Never seen it before. Missed the whole thing. Not the biggest zombie fan in the world. I'll go with it. Okay. But I was very impressed with The Walking Dead for two reasons. Interesting. It's not the programme I thought it was going to be. It's got a sense of humour. It's got a nice tone, lovely audio. But the thing I liked most about it was some of the cars that appeared in the first episode.
Yes.
They total a Camaro in the first 5 minutes of the programme. This absolute classic General Motors sports car smashed to ribbons. I thought, oh, God, no. If they're prepared to do that, how brutal is this programme going to be? And then, of course, then you get zombies eating a horse, you know. So I should have known. But it made me think about, you know, casting cars. Someone would have made a choice as to what car they wanted to tell that particular story, why that car. Prop design is an integral part of art design, and the car choices that we've seen in TV shows such as Breaking Bad, famously, and Better Call Saul, all that stuff, you know, really important things. Sopranos, the cars become almost as much a star as the people in it themselves. You're the film and movie expert, Zog, would you agree?
Well, we sort of had a mini chat about this not long ago, because a couple of things that had caught my eye at the end of last year on screen. First of all, in Megalopolis, the Francis Coppola epic.
The outstanding use of $200 million, yes.
Outstanding. was it really $200 million?
It was
certainly a huge amount of money, crazy money. We don't have time to discuss the film itself, there's quite
a 120 million. There we are. Yeah, my apologies.
It's absolutely bonkers. It's definitely worth seeing, I would say. Quite a spectacle. But there are a couple of great little car casting choices there. First of all, the lead character played by Adam Driver, who's this visionary architect who wants to remake the city, the fictional city that's obviously New York, wants to remake it in his vision. He drives, or rather is driven in, he has a chauffeur, driven in a Citroën DS
Nice.
Which is absolutely bang on, I think, for this...
Is this set in the future?
It's a near future. I mean, you know, all okay. of the... It's, I don't think it specifies. I think you could say it's maybe an alternate reality, you know, a slightly sort of possible yeah. alternate history, slightly futuristic. Yeah. There's definitely sci-fi stuff in there, you know, special material, if you like. But it's essentially a near contemporary sci-fi-ish story. And so all the other vehicles, you know, are the kind of sort of run-of-the-mill things you might expect to see in a contemporary American drama. So you've got a lot of Cadillac Escalades and big SUVs and, you know, the police cars you'd expect to see. But there's the DS as Adam Driver's car is an absolutely bang-on choice for his car, you know, this idiosyncratic maverick visionary. And then there's also I don't think this is a minor spoiler alert, there's a car crash, and the car involved in the crash is an MG Type T.
Oh, my.
Which was quite a surprise to turn up in this...
What, an MG, a 1950s MG TF?
Yes, exactly.
Upright, sitting on the rear wheels.
Well, I'm not sure if there's a TF or a TA, or there were several versions of the Type T.
But the 50s not the MG TF of the 90s.
I'm not terribly good at knowing the differences between the... But yeah, but it's the old school, the original Type T, not the late 20th century...
Not the awful one. Yeah.
Not the
Metro going backwards. It was a great car in some ways. It was just badly built. Anyway, sorry.
So I thought that was just really great
stylish
bits of casting in the vehicular roles. Like I say, if you're a Coppola fan, go and see it, catch up with it. It's quite something. You may not like it, but it's certainly something.
Oh, I love Coppola, even if it's bad. I love a bad film. They're more interesting than a perfectly reasonable film. And by the look of it, you guys are going, it's not what it should be, right?
Big subjects, but you know, but you know what a fan I am of trauma movies and the
trauma. Have you ever tried Nymphoid Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell?
Wow,
I haven't, but. But I have tremendously fond memories of Surf Nazis Must Die.
Hey, the DS you mentioned there, it crops up in another sci-fi movie, kind of alternative future thing. I'm trying to work out, is it in Majority Report?
Minority Report.
That was the alternative version.
Majority Report, that was the less good sequel.
Majority Report. That's funny.
A lot of people were angry about it. They kept letting us know somehow.
Very good, Alice.
The majority were reporting it. Sorry, it was too highbrow for my little brain to pass properly.
No, it's good.
There's another film. What's it called? A sci-fi film from around about the same time.
Gattaca.
Gattaca. It's in Gattaca. The DS is in Gattaca, not Minority Report, or even Majority Report.
Any of the reports, minor or major, not there.
Yeah.
No, so the Minority Report right had a custom deal with Lexus, if memory serves, because all their cars sort of floated or were stuck on rails or some nonsense like that, and there was a custom Lexus for it. Let me have a quick look.
Yeah, the UE or something. I remember seeing it in the Peterson Museum in Los Angeles in 2019.
Yes, the Lexus 2054, it's called.
Yeah, I know it. It's quite swoopy.
Yeah, and the other thing that caught my eye, now I'm a little bit late on catching up on this, so apologies, but Derry Girls. Fabulous comedy series, which I was very late, very slow to get around to actually watching. I absolutely loved it. But there was a very, very unexpected and beautiful bit of car casting when one of the nuns turns up driving a DeLorean.
Now, wow. Wow.
Oh, a nun in Alex, a nun in a DeLorean.
I think you're going to have to watch Derry Girls now, aren't you, Alex?
Oh, you have. No, you do. Listen, it's a solid recommendation. It's one of my absolutely top comedy picks of the last couple of years. Not up there with Veep, which remains top of the... But for British comedy series, I think, yeah, Derry Girls is the best thing I've seen in the last couple of years, I think.
And of course they're going to have the DeLorean. It was built in Belfast.
Of course.
Another good spot of car casting. Have either of you watched Ludwig yet?
Yes.
What, the 1980 slightly disturbing 10-minute Watch with Mother animation about a crystalline living robotic creature who danced to the tune of Beethoven?
I'm going to say no.
Right. No. Yeah.
I'm going to say no. No, it's a BBC crime sort of crime comedy drama thing with David Mitchell playing a person who is good at puzzles and various things happen and whatever. But Ludwig's car is a Saab 900 and it's so perfectly cast. It's amazing. And he drives it through Cambridge and it's just, it looks perfect. I will say they do get Cambridge wrong quite a lot, which enrages me.
Well, it would, of course.
That doesn't matter.
But to be fair, fewer people are going to care than if you get it wrong in London.
True.
Oh, yes. Hey, David Mitchell, I wonder if he had any say in that. I'll only drive a Saab, I can't do his voice, a Saab 900. It's perfect, isn't it? A Saab is a real architect or private investigator's car, isn't it? We've said it before on the programme, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, God, it's an amazing car.
I don't think it would be giving anything away because it's so near the start of the series, but, of course, the car that David Mitchell is driving in the series... Is his brother's car?
Or yes, rather his twin's car. We don't really want to spoil it for those who haven't seen it. But yes,
yes. Well, we can cut that bit out if we decide it's necessary to preserve the integrity of the viewing experience. But but I think we can get enough from what the family's like, what the brothers are like. But no, it's an appropriate and characterful choice. Yeah, I agree.
I used to own a 900. Loved that car. Great car. Long time ago.
They're a very Marmite car. I mean, much more on the, like end of it, I think. But my cousin Tim drove 900s for years and...
Your cousin Tim who plays guitar or has played guitar for Dexys, that Tim?
That's the fella. That's the fella.
Wow.
Best rhythm guitarist in the UK, according to Martin Ware.
Yeah, wow.
He drove 900s for years and always replaced, the one that he had to get rid of with another 900.
Correct.
So, yeah, they're cars that inspire great loyalty, a lot of enthusiasm in their drivers, I think.
My friend Andrew Sanning, has just bought a really lovely Aero, 900 Aero convertible. I say just bought. Ooh. A couple of years ago, I helped him find it, and it's immaculate. He comes up here. Anyway, should we move on to, we've got maybe 10 minutes left, right? Something I'd really like to talk about. It's two things in one, really. First of all, the best-selling cars in 2024. Let's just discuss this, and it will lead to a wider conversation about the state of the motor industry at the moment. But here we go. The top-selling five are... Number five, the Tesla Model Y, 32,000 cars. Four, the Nissan Juke, British-built, 34,000 units. Number three, the Nissan Qashqai, also British-built, 42,000 units. Number two, the Kia Sportage, 47,000 units. Where's that built? Slovakia, I think.
Let's have a look.
Not sure. And number one, the Ford, where the heck was this built? Puma, 48,000 units. That's the top five cars. They're all very similar, with the exception of the Tesla Model Y. It's the only pure electric car in that top five. Below that, you've got the Golf, the Hyundai Tucson. Tuesday.
Happy days, Thursday, Friday, happy days.
Just what I was thinking.
Very good.
Sorry, everyone. I picked a kiln gas top. It's all over.
You did. MG are in there at number 8 with the MGHS, and at number 9, the Volvo XC40, another Chinese hit. I know it's not Chinese. And at number 10, the Volkswagen Polo. Intriguing. We export 80% of the cars we make in Britain and import 90% of the cars that we buy. The market for EVs is roughly 25% or thereabouts at the moment, or over the last 12 months. BYD are building in Hungary and Turkey now to get around Chinese import duties to UK and EU. Chery have taken over what was the Nissan plant in Barcelona to build their own Moda 5. And Jaku 7. Jaku. Leap Motor are in Poland building cars. It's an interesting age, an age which has resulted in Nissan and Honda signing a memorandum of understanding to merge and probably take Mitsubishi with them. Wow, that's massive, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Huge. It's colossal. Enormous.
And why are they doing it?
Alex, I'm tempted to throw this to you because you're probably have a better...
No, the thing is,
Are better here. Although, my big question is, given that Honda and Nissan are so similar, in terms of the kind of vehicles they make,
yeah,
and what kind of, facilities and everything they have, and supply chains, what does this merger really offer to them? Because it seems, it's not like two very different car companies coming together where they're likely to be able to be more mutual benefit. What would you say about that perspective?
I mean, it creates a truly massive, hyper brand. There is always the worry that it might turn out to be a bit Stellantis-y, because I spent today writing some news and looking at some things, and you go, oh, well, Jeep's made this, and DS is making this, which is based on the same thing as this, but it's slightly better because of this, but it'd be slightly more expensive, and sort of playing leapfrog with itself. But I think when it comes to Honda-Nissan, let's take a look at Honda's EV efforts of late. Not brilliant. Whereas Nissan, well, the Leaf isn't the most exciting car in the world, and the RE isn't the most exciting car in the world. They are quite good. So,
yeah, Honda were there early on, pioneering in the mass market electric hybrid vehicle space. Surely they should have done better.
Hybrid, yeah. Electric, no.
I'm slightly unfairly conflating the two, I think.
Nissan kicked it off with the Leaf, and Honda, it stuck to its guns. It did the other, so there's parallel and series hybrids. Toyota went one way and their system's really good, and Honda went the other. And I remember talking to a guy on What Car magazine when I was an intern, so it was, the dawn of fucking time, and he was running a Civic hybrid, the IMA they used to call it. I went, how is it? And he went, absolute shit, mate. And I was like, oh, okay. But at least they stuck with it, and they did do some good with it. The recent, is it the ENY1? Which I had a quick go in and didn't think was that bad, but mine was a quick squirt around the corner on a launch. While I was there doing something completely different. And it's been sort of universally panned as not being very good, whereas the Aria, again, not the most exciting thing in the world. I had fun in it, wanging it around Millbrook, but it looks good, the tech works, and it's better than the anyone. But what does Nissan get out of it? I guess money, a bit of security. There was stories doing the rounds just before Christmas, and someone was basically saying Nissan has 2 years left and then it's no longer a business.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. The whole reason for this, it's not really a merger, it's a bailout. Honda will take control of the new company that will own Honda and Nissan. Nissan are pretty much close to bankrupt, which is incredible because they have huge penetration worldwide. North America, Nissan, everyone drives a Nissan, even an Infiniti, right? They're in Australia, they're in Africa, they're in India, they are in the Middle East, they are universal. Honda are everywhere in a similar scale to Nissan. Honda still sell more motorcycles than cars worldwide.
But crucially, they're more efficient than Nissan. This is the thing, because I think, oh, and by the way, I think I misspoke when I meant that Nissan were there early with
electric cars.
In the electric and hybrid space, sorry, I think I said Honda when I meant to say Nissan. That aside, Honda is a much more efficient company than Nissan. I think last year, Nissan sold about 3 million cars and Honda 3.8. But Honda, despite selling, 20% more vehicles and broadly speaking similar, you know, valued vehicles, Honda is worth about four times what Nissan is worth. Because they are significantly more efficient.
And they're really getting together to battle the Chinese more than anyone. I listed BYD and everyone else, Chery, moving into Europe in a big way. The Chinese model up to now, it's been very like the Japanese model. Once upon a time, you wanted a Japanese car, it was built in Japan. Then they started building in the UK and mainland Europe, and they have facilities in America, of course. Honda build more cars in America than they build in Japan. They are a multinational, and what we've described as Chinese companies up to now have become multinational. They now have European R&D centres, they have manufacturing bases in many continents, not just in China, and they're still competing because they have access to battery technology, and they've guaranteed supplies for the minerals for their batteries. That's the key.
But is the ownership of those companies shared in any way, or is the ownership of the companies entirely Chinese?
I would think that they are entirely Chinese. I don't think they're partnerships with anyone in Europe that I know of.
Jaku and Omoda, those are Chery, which is wholly Chinese.
Mm.
BYD is BYD, which is wholly Chinese. Who else is out there?
My point was just that I think I'm not sure that it's right to talk about them as multinational companies, because they are Chinese companies that own and run facilities, you know, that
outside their home country,
in other countries.
Okay,
but they are not multinational companies. Well,
okay,
that's my interpretation in my language. Maybe somebody who's a merger and acquisition specialist would tell me I'm entirely wrong to link the ownership of a company to its multinationality, if you like.
Mm.
Okay, they're manufacturing outside of their home country. Let's call them that sort of. They're a company who manufacture outside of their home country. And that's why Nissan and Honda are putting arms around each other, because they're very, very hard to compete with at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're just not competing in terms of the electric car market. You know, of course, Chinese companies are absolutely killing it, and the older car companies are struggling.
Yeah.
So this is a response to that. How successful it will be, we'll see. I mean, I note, by the way, that Carlos Ghosn, the former Nissan boss,
slash James Bond wannabe,
yeah,
slash Mr. Bean lookalike,
Johnny English lookalike, surely.
Same thing.
But there was a very good documentary about Ghosn and his...
I think we've mentioned it on the show before, yeah.
I think we did.
Ghosn with the woodwind, Ghosn, gone.
I mean, obviously, he has an axe to grind, so maybe you might take what he says about Nissan's prospect with a pinch of salt. But he was a bit sceptical that it was a good idea.
Well, let's see. You know, Toyota seem to have a bit of a tech advantage in that they are well ahead. I think their relationship is with Panasonic, is that Denso? I don't know. But they are well ahead with their development of solid-state batteries, way ahead of Nissan and Honda. And maybe that's yet another factor that they simply can't compete with their own national, or, well, Toyota definitely multinational, rivals individually. Maybe they're more worried about being taken over by Toyota than forming a benign partnership with Nissan, a friendly. Hey, that's how it works. Big fish swallow little fish. Consolidation has been happening for years. Well, we wish Mitsubishi, Nissan and Honda well in their three-way marriage to come, and we'll be watching closely. That's it for the first episode of season 21 of Gareth Jones on Speed. By the way, start planning for something special in, June, July, August, because there's going to be a big bash and we expect you all to be there. But in the meantime, from Zog, it's farewell.
Goodbye.
From Alex, it's see ya.
Bye.
And from me, Gareth, it's will. Goodbye. Ta-ra.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to GarethJones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!